this thing. No title again.
And I did only be a little money.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Sound of a few motorcycles. There's got to be at least 50 in town. And if you're wondering what town, it is Merrickville. Just along Highway 43, just a little bit west of Kempville. I got family in the area. I love this town. There's the Merrickville Locks here on the Rideau River system. It's a gorgeous day, bright, sunny, warm. Everybody seems to be out, convertible cars, a biker gathering from who knows where. And a lovely old historic town. Like, this is the part of Ontario, that traditional old Canada history. You know, a mean street, old stone buildings. And it's just so nice to see once you get out of the big cities and you visit the smaller towns. You still have a sense of the past and tradition. That very proud Ontario, what it used to be. I've just come from a family luncheon, dinner. My sister-in-law just turned 70, I just turned 65. And so we combined a few birthdays at this place called the Brigadoon in Oxford Mills. Unbelievably good restaurant. You know, you travel miles to get here. Excellent, excellent food. Wonderful service. And it's an old, old inn full of antiques. Kind of place I just love, you know, to look at, walk around, look at all the shelves. And what was especially nice was just being with my brother and sister, who I don't see often enough. Niece, nephew, sister-in-law, brother-in-law. And their children. I spent the morning, better part of the morning, sitting in the sunshine in a nice comfortable deck chair with my little 7-year-old great-niece, I guess. I don't know the connection. And my niece's daughter. Playing games with her, it was just so much fun to enter the world of a child who can laugh and who is just, they're not afraid to be silly, and I can just get into that zone so nicely. It was glorious. We wrote a little story together, called it Sun, Oh Sun, and just sort of we'd take turns bouncing words and ideas back and forth. We played games. I pretended I was giving her college-level exams on Zen Buddhism and client-centered therapy and so on. I'd read these long, involved quotes from Alan Watts, tell her there's going to be a test, and then fail her for not coming up with the right answer. And then finally, when I asked her one quote from a Chinese Zen master and asked her what the answer to the question was, she said, "I don't know." And, of course, I made a big deal of that and said, "That's correct, that's brilliant, that's exactly the right answer. You've got an A+ on the test." And she just giggled and laughed. And it's that kind of silliness that you can, when you enter the world with a child, it's just so beautiful, so wonderful, so much fun. And anyway, I'm on my way home now. We had this great lunch together. Stood and talked and shared a few old memories from our common childhood, my brother and sister. Then went our separate ways, and I thought I'm going to take a long, slow drive back to Toronto via Highway 43, Highway 7. These, if they don't mean anything to you, that's quite all right. Anybody who's familiar with countryside just knows how beautiful it is to drive along a winding country road. I just love that feeling. It's so nice to get off of that fucking 401. Just for a change. And when we came up to Merrickville, I said, "Well, damn it, you know, you're going to have to stop here and start a podcast. So welcome to Dixon Jeans number 399. I don't know if we've ever podcast from Merrickville. Feels like I have. I've been here so many times. I used to work close to this area. I was at when I came back from Nigeria, I lived at my cousin's house in Russell and commuted to Oxford Mills, where I worked at a group home, a sheltered home for mentally handicapped, mentally retarded adults. It was a great job. Driving the back country roads all through the winter. I remember each of those characters. I can picture them so vividly. You know, you won't remember students from year to year. But when you work with mentally retarded people, I'm sorry for using that word, that's just what I grew up with. Mentally handicapped, whatever you want to call them. I love the sound of those bikes. You meet such characters and you just get attached. You have fun. Again, it's like entering the world of a child. You have this wonderful sharing. It goes deeper than normal human relations. So I'm not going to say much. I just wanted to, for a change, start this podcast out for something else. It was kind of special. I was fairly quiet. My sister asked me what I was thinking about. I'm in a very different mood with my older brother and sister. I was very reflective, I guess. I was very impressed. My sister goes off on these spiritual retreats, you know, banging drums in the woods by the river, stuff like that. And my brother is, I don't know what the proper title is, an assistant minister. He's got a proper stamp and seal, and he can go out to rural churches where they may only have 6 or 7 people in the congregation and give a sermon. He's good at it. He likes doing that, and I cheer him on for that. And I realize, hey, maybe we're not so different after all. Him standing at the pulpit in an old church in a rural community, talking to the people there, and me holding a microphone in my hand, sitting on the banks of the Rideau River Canal. talking to you week after week. It is kind of interesting. I'm blessed with a good family, good people. I have an awful lot to be grateful for on this reflective Sunday. So I think I'm going to close it off there and get back on my merry way. Take my time, stop where I need to. You may be hearing from me again before this journey is over. Yeah, this must have been the meeting place. Get on your bikes and motor on out to Merrickville. It's the season for bikes, that's for sure. Big bastards do. All right, boys and girls, that's it. Stay tuned. There's more coming your way. Bye for now. Bypassed Smith Falls, that poor, rundown, big town. Used to have a treatment center, Hershey, candy bar factory, and a few other things. They've all closed down. So Smith Falls is on rough times, but I motored on ahead to Perth, where we are now. Again, following the Rideau and eventually getting up to Highway 7. I'm in the last dual park right alongside the Tay River. This was where the last fatal duel was fought. The last fatal duel. Duels were a common method of dealing with conflict in the days of early Upper Canada, a rather harsh form of male pride, frontier justice, and elite bravado. It was right here along these shores that Canada's last fatal duel was fought in 1833. The story behind it is a romantic yet tragic tale of a love triangle that ended in the death of one of the suitors. The fight was a pitiful affair between law students Robert Lyon and John Wilson. Lyon was a suave, well-heeled young man who liked to flirt, and unfortunately he chose to do so with a governess named Elizabeth Hughes. Although Wilson was already betrothed to another, he was in love with Elizabeth. He often wrote flowery romantic poems to her that went undelivered. Sadly, on June 13th, 1833, at 6 in the morning, the lovelorn Wilson challenged Lyon to a duel, and history notes the sorry tale. Lyon died and was buried in Perth, and although Wilson eventually married Hughes, theirs was not a happy union. Okay, well, there's that story for you. And there's pictures of the dueling guns and the poems. And Perth is a wonderful little bit of Canadian history. Great pictures, great, great spot. Lovely place to visit. Lots of, I guess it was a, we're not going to give you all the historic stuff. It's full of churches. I do have some, God, that wind, sorry. There is a distant ancestor on my mother's side, on the maternal side of the family, a Reed who was buried here, was one of the first chemists in town, and they're all up in her family tree history with the various things. One of them, I guess his son, they were given land, right? Anybody who fought for the British in these wars, the various parts of the world, were given land in Canada, and particularly around here, Perth. And they could just retire to this frontier. God damn, can't stand the wind, so I'm going to end it there and continue on my journey. Talk to you later. Bye.
Off the number one position on the charts in October of 1961. It also inspired some answer songs, including I'm No Runaround by Ginger and the Snaps.
Let me tell you now, I don't know what to do. I don't want to be called a runaround too. Oh.
Here's the song Rolling Stone magazine named as one of the greatest songs of all time. Dion's schoolyard masterpiece, Runaround Sue, on Radio 2 Drive.
Here's my story, it's sad but true. About a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around with every single guy in town. Keep away from a runaround Sue. Yeah, my miss her lips and a smile on her face. The touch of her hand and this girl's one blaze. So if you don't want to cry like I do, I'll keep away from a runaround Sue. Yeah.
the classic Run-Around Sue to dig deeper into the story you just heard and to hear the stories behind other iconic songs from pop and rock history.
Pulls that off there. I love it. I was 13 years old when that came up. Just starting high school, I guess, and I loved it. Like, that's just, it's around the time you're getting really excited about girls, and just, there was something really sexy about that song. It's funny, I was just thinking of my friend Tim Coyne. I thought, why would I connect that with him? But maybe I'm thinking of Tim's father was a musician in a band, and maybe that's the kind of stuff his dad did. I don't know, but I just felt obliged to mention Tim Coyne's name. I hadn't mentioned him for a while, and as I get to finishing off this block of podcasting, I'm feeling more and more the need to, oh shit, I gotta have a backup, like another bucket to puke into, and that's where the Talking to Tim episodes are gonna come in. So check out, if you haven't already, Having Said That podcast. There's a link up on my blog, DixonJanesBlogspot.com. And you'll find a link there you can click and take you right over to Having Said That. And there you'll find the whole series that I hope Tim Coyne and I are going to do together as a conversation. I know we've done a few already. This will be number 4 coming up, so stay tuned. It is now Dixon Jane's podcast number 399. And as I move in on 400, I begin to feel a little creepy and a little embarrassed and a little, oh shit, man. Who am I going to talk to? Like, it's become a real need to get the things out of my system. Like, what did I do today? You know, and it sounds really kind of silly. And wait a minute now. You mean what you do doesn't have any value unless you talk about it with somebody? That can't be right. But it sort of feels that way. Like, for instance, when I woke up today, Monday morning, had already submitted all my marks, so there was no need for me to go back to the college, and I start my college counseling classes tomorrow, so I don't have any more free time. What things do I have to get off the list today? I was talking with Francis Wooby. Mr. Wooby, yes, the Right Honorable, out near Charbot Lake, out in the country, and about just the crap it takes just to get through day-to-day living. Am I shouting? I'm sorry. The crap that's involved in just day-to-day living. Holy shit. I mean, there is no free day. There's stuff you have to do every day, even on a fucking vacation. And again, complain because of all the comforts we have, and hey, whoever said life was supposed to be free, man? You're not having to go out and club meat or face starvation or the wrath of your fellow clansmen if you don't pull your weight. You know, we got it pretty damn easy. I know. But the more complicated our lives become. For example, we are a household of 2 cars, so today, first thing I had to do was go in and renew the sticker plate at a cost of $82, I think, for my own Mazda. I had to get that done, annual sticker plate, bam, $82 over to the government. I don't complain. That seems, well, whatever they need it for, take it. It's a privilege to have your roads. Speaking of which, I drove back yesterday from Ottawa. I talked to you a bit from Merrickville, and it was the most glorious drive. I had that open Highway 7 all the way from, I went through Smith Falls onto Perth, and then just hit Highway 7, and there was nothing in front of me. I had the cruise control set for 98. And it's a winding road. It's been repaved. It's glorious. Stopped at Mamora. I don't know, but it's not Marathon. For a Tim Hortons, they had a maple bagel. Maple flavored bagel. Man, it was good with cream cheese and split pea and ham soup. God damn, this is good stuff, folks. We're talking Tim Hortons here. It ain't just about the donuts. But that felt so good. I got a phone call coming in. That felt so delightful. That sort of the zen of driving, the thrill of being free enough just to zoom on down the road. The iPod is plugged in. It's on shuffle, and I'm just hearing. One of the greatest was a chapter of Matt Dillon singing, reciting On the Road followed by, and this is on just random, a really rough Tom Waits song. And it just fit perfectly, that rough voice, after he's talking about Dean Moriarty, you know, Neil Cassidy getting drunk in some Colorado bar that he had actually lived in as a kid with his drunken father. Man, it was just raw and it fit. That's sheer pleasure. So there is that pleasure of driving, the pleasure of living in a society where we pay taxes to have these roads maintained. Up against a society like in Bangladesh, where it's almost up to 400 now workers just crushed to death. It is so, so painfully tragic. These are poor people who just struggling to make a living on for pennies so we can have our cheap Joe Fresh clothing and so on. And inspectors who probably get bribed and paid off. And then you hear the lynch mob. They caught the owner of the building try to escape into India. Caught the owner of the building. And that just, you know, and then you hear the crowds in the street, lynch him, lynch him. And you know he deserves it. But Jesus, at least give the guy a trial. And you compare that with our society. At least, yeah, we have crooked politicians, but what is going on? What's all this interference, damn? I don't know. I'm not getting any phone calls. What's going on? Hey. Maybe. What? What do you want? Jesus Christ. All right, I gotta stop. I'm gonna come back because I gotta finish my story. Stop.
Scaled the grand old face of the plateau. Some belong to strangers and some to folks you know. Holy ghosts and talk show hosts are planted in the sand to beautify the foothills, shake the many hands. There's nothing on the top but a bucket and a mop and an illustrated book about birds. You see a lot of things. Can't stop and look at what you've done. Plateau's clean, no dirt to be seen in the work. It was fun. There's nothing on the top but a bucket and a mop and an illustrated book about birds. See a lot up there, but don't be scared. Who needs action when you got words? Began to scan around for the next plateau. Some say it was Greenland, some say Mexico. Others decided it was nowhere except for where they stood. Those were all just guesses, wouldn't help you if they could. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what that was about. I'm sorry. So anyway, I was mentioning the privilege of owning two cars. My wife's Toyota. I thought, okay. We got one flat tire. Guy tried to fix it. A couple of plugs didn't. So I think, oh, Christ, all right. I would shop around and try and find one used tire. That's pretty cheap. Do I replace all four tires? Well, fuck, that's a bit of overkill. So what do you do? You got to take care of business sometimes. And I always feel good because I'm so shitty at it. I postpone so much that when it comes to the cars, I actually stay on top of things. I got down, I drove to the CAA garage, I booked an appointment for Friday morning, I loaded all four tires into my car, I had the foresight to think about that, got a tire expert mechanic to come out look at them. He said, okay, you can keep those two, put them on the rear, get two new ones for the front, including the one that has the slow leak, that or the hole that can't be repaired. Then went in, got quotes, got the price of the two tires. So every time I go in, the point of the story is, you go in for a $39.99 oil change and inspection. I've never had one that's cost me less than $275. Like, there's just always something else. And I can do it now because she's working and I'm working, and you just, bam, hey, problem solved, no problem. Yeah, give me two new tires. Here's my credit card. It's just so easy. But God damn, when the day comes when there's no more money coming in, holy fuck. Am I going to have to get rid of a car? Jesus Christ. Life is so easy now with my wife having her own car. And I know that independence means so much to her. She's not going to give it up. I'm not going to give up a car. I get so much pleasure out of it. It's just the cost. So what I could be seeing here is that maybe if I did a little more of what Anthony Marco does, of just, all right, here's a 20-minute podcast just talking about the price of owning two cars, you know, boom. There's a topic, and don't allow yourself to wander off and so on. In other words, do I need to change up the Dixon James podcast? Can I come up with a new one that's going to be shorter? Or can I just keep fucking motoring on and give you fucking 401, 402, 403, goddammit, all the way to fucking 500? God damn, you know, and that's where I'm going. I was sure we were going to stop at 400. I was sure, and I don't fucking think I can. And I know, talking to Mr. Wooby again, the Right Honorable. He says, oh, yeah, I'm listening. All these people who say they're not listening anymore, fucking Shane. He's still listening, still enjoying it. I kept him company on a trip back, a 3 a.m. road trip back from fucking Pennsylvania. And then in the afternoon, I'm in his backyard. I think that's kind of neat, you know, that it just would happen, work out that way. Mr. Wooby is a very smart, well-spoken, he has a way with words, I guess that's what I'm saying, and, I think he's one of those quieter guys. You go to a conference and maybe he's sitting there and he's not going to go out of his way to put himself in front of everybody like I do. But you take the time to turn around and talk to a man like, anyways, holy fuck, here's a person worth listening to and engaging in conversation with. So that's it. Enough sucking up. I suck up to all my full-time listeners. Anyway, I guess that's it. That's all I wanted to say. I'm just saying that I got to unload sometimes. I actually feel good so that I can go back to my wife and say, well, I took care of your car. Don't worry, I got you two new tires. And my wife can feel, oh, my husband is good for something after all. He actually takes care. I don't do much around the house, but I do look after the cars. And that's something, you know. Next thing we have to do, I got to tear up all the fucking carpets and get somebody to come in and sandblast the hardwood floors. And then I got to buy furniture for the whole fucking empty spare room so my cousin can stay there, and then completely redo my son's room, and oh shit, there's any number of things, and then fucking start getting ready for my summer tour. But you don't want to hear any more about that, do you? No, you don't. Alright, boys and girls, I'm signing off for now. It's time to put an end to this baby, and talk to you again soon. Bye for now.
Yeah, I missed the point.
of the story about getting the license sticker. It was incredibly smooth. You walk in, there's a queue, there's a lot of people in line. You come up to a receptionist. She hands you a ticket number. She looks at me. She smiles. She says, I'm glad to see you. You bought a book. And, you know, implying it's going to be a long wait. The wait was maybe 5 minutes. You sit in a comfortable chair. It's like an airport lounge. There's got to be at least 15 booths with people behind them representing, I may add, multicultural Scarborough when you look around at who is manning the booths or womening the booths. And it was incredibly efficient. Bam, you pay your money. That's it. The thing I wanted to say was it's kind of weird that here's me and my ancestry feeling, oh, so much like, am I in some other country? Like, where are the white people? Like, bam, I was the visible minority today. And I don't have a problem with that. That's just the life of living in Scarborough. But for somebody else, when I drove through these small towns, you know, I was mentioning through Perth and other places, wow, it is so different. And my last trip to rural Nova Scotia, wow. It's all white people like I used to go to school with. And it's just an interesting observation. Like, I sat there in my local mall where they have a Service Ontario to get my license stickers and felt exactly like when I was back in Japan and I had to get my resident card annualized, you know, whatever, revitalized, brought back to life, renewed, I guess would be the right word. And you sit in this waiting room, and it's not a friendly bureaucracy, and it's all in Japanese, and you're there with all kinds of other people, mainly from the Philippines and other countries, working here, and you're figuring, hey, I got a legitimate job, I'm in a suit and tie, I'm in a teacher with an education, I'm here under a proper visa, why do I have to spend the day sitting here to deal with somebody who's very unpleasant just to get this proper card renewed? And that's kind of oddly what it felt like today sitting there. And yet, when I left, I felt happy. Hey, it was efficient. It was fast. Nobody got bribed. I got what I wanted. I paid my proper taxes for this license sticker. The system works. We are all so fucking lucky in this country. That's all I wanted to say, okay? I just missed that part, all right? So it's okay, me living in Scarborough, but I think as I drove yesterday through Smith Falls, Perth, Merrickville, Kempville, Oxford Station, Oxford Mills, that gee golly willikers, I wonder if I ever will leave Scarborough and live in another town, and what would it be like? Remember I was talking a few years ago when my life was a little shakier about moving to Brockville? Will I ever? And I still get those thoughts. Starting a new life. And I picture myself on my own, single. So I don't know what's happened to everybody else in my life, but I'm picturing myself alone, opening up a sort of a storefront shop for counseling, mediation, whatever, teaching, and beginning a new life in a small rural Ontario town. Don't think that's going to happen, but the fantasy takes flight every once in a while. All right. Gotta get some burgers. Talk to you later. Bye.
You're nobody till somebody loves you. You're nobody till somebody cares. You may be king, you may possess the world and its gold, but gold won't bring you happiness when you're growing old. The world still is the same, you never change it. As sure as the stars shine above, you're nobody till somebody loves you. So find yourself somebody to love. the same. You never change it. As sure as the stars shine above, well, you're nobody till somebody loves you. So find yourself somebody to love.
Okay. I don't know what segment this is in this particular podcast, number 399, but it feels very important. It feels to me like I've got to get this right, especially as I'm talking about maybe only having one more after this. Maybe that's my first point. The other voice keeps popping up, you know. What the hell are you doing at 400? Go for 500, you know. I'm not trying to be cute about this or coy or wait for people to say, oh, come on, dude, put out some more. I'm trying to be very real and sincere. And I don't know where I'm going. I just know that something is very right. Today, I had my first class in this counseling program I'm taking. And I went in, you know, I wonder who's going to be in the class and what's the teacher going to be like and just wasn't so sure. And I got in there and almost immediately felt, wow, thank God, this is great. There's real people in there, all ages and backgrounds, including, you know, people who've had serious troubles in their own lives. And that's why they're in here, hoping that they can help somebody else turn around. So it's not a bullshit academic. It's not just young college students, you know, wanting to get another program. So that tickles me no end. I went out and bought the program, or the course, the book, An Integrative Approach, Personal Counseling Skills, An Integrative Approach, and I've got my little ruler and my yellow highlighter, and I'm just going through like a kid. I do this every time I take a course. I love going back to college. I love taking courses. I really want to do well. Like, I won't be satisfied with anything less than an A. I'm thrilled because 24% of the course is on sort of keeping a journal. And that's something I just love to do. I can't wait to put my first entry down, you know, and reflect on what I'm learning. The other thing is, I just started reading this book, and already they're talking about Carl Rogers. Well, as you know, in the past few podcasts, I talked about going back and pulling off the shelf my old copy of On Becoming a Person, and wondering if it's still relevant, and it sure is. The fact that so much of what counseling is today is based on his theories, his ideas, that client-centered therapy is this equality. So I don't want to get too deeply into this. I mean, I'm tempted now to start reading out sections that I've already highlighted from the textbook, and if I do that, it means there's no end to the program. But the other point I wanted to get across was that it seemed almost by chance I ended up taking this course. Remember, sort of, I saw somebody, there was a link, oh, yeah, in there, checked it out, and bam. And then when I found out I was going to have to pay full fare, I thought, well, maybe I'm not going to. And now that I'm in it, I realize, oh, my God, there was just no other way it was meant to be. And that's the most remarkable thing about life, is that you can find yourself in a situation which is where you are supposed to be. And that's exactly, I'm supposed to, right now in my life, be taking a course. At the age of 65, I'm counseling. I decided today I'm going to work until I'm 72. Don't ask me how I came up. 70 seemed too soon. I got to make this investment to pay off. I have no idea what I'm actually going to do with this. If anything, it may be just for me. But what's so neat is it just goes full circle back to exactly, you know, 40 years ago, I was in group therapy. Living through the works of Carl Rogers and that whole approach to counseling and healing and everything else. So I'm just thrilled about this. It's really exciting. It's such a good feeling. My brain still works. I had my hand up in class and I was just calling out. And I'm just very, very pleased with the way it's all going. And I'm just pleased. And I guess it's hard for me to convey. It's not just, Ken's taking a course. No, I'm doing exactly what it is I'm supposed to be doing at this time in my life. And that's a neat thing, and I would hope that many others of you find what are the triggers, what are the things that help guide us to be where we're supposed to be. I don't know, I can't explain other than, in my case, years and years and years of just living in trust and going through some bumps and eventually having enough faith in yourself to trust your instincts and to stop fighting. And earlier on in podcasts, on this very podcast, I always talked about at the beginning of trying to get to where I'm supposed to be, to try to bring this oneness. And I really think, and that's another reason I'm tempted to stop at 400, I think I'm so close to that now. Not that I've achieved this high state of nirvana and great awareness, because I'm always going to fumble and make mistakes, fall backwards, and move sideways and in circles and everything else. I mean, it's not that I've found the answer. It's just that I'm on the journey, and I'm happy to be on the journey. And the journey is the end in itself. You know, the journey is the thing. And that's just a thrill. It's just such a rush. So whether or not I will ever make a good counselor or not, I'm reading about those very things right now, that what it takes to be a counselor and being congruent, being at one with yourself is part of it. And maybe that's why, again, I wouldn't have been ready for this course any earlier. Counselors using the integrative approach are congruent, empathetic, warm, and sensitive with good rapport. I'm working on that. Non-judgmental and unconditional positive regard with unconditional positive regard. Attentive, understanding, and supportive. Collaborative while showing respect for the client's competence. Proficient in using counseling skills purposefully. So I've got to learn more about the actual counseling skills. But I think in terms of the other qualities that are necessary to make this work, I think I'm well on the way. And I guess that's what I wanted to share with you today. The dude, these 400 hours have been a lot of, maybe, amongst other things, my journey and my preparation for this next stage, you know? So bear with me as I seesaw back and forth to go on, to stop, to change, whatever. We shall see what we shall see. All right? So thank you again for listening. As always, let me get back to my book with my yellow highlighter and read more. It is just so damn exciting. I recommend that. I've said it before. 2 years ago, hey, I was taking the Teaching a Course in Adults program. Love doing that. This is even better. This is more to the point. More of what I want to do. I'm still holding on to those very faint dreams of working with Aboriginal people up north somewhere in some reserve. Who knows? Maybe they wouldn't want me. That's okay. But we shall see what we shall see. Bye for now.
Warm winds blowing, heat and blue sky, and a road that goes forever. Been thinking about it lately, been watching some TV, been looking all around me, and what has come to be. Been talking to my neighbor, and he agrees with me. It's all gone crazy. Well, my wife returns from taking my little girl to school. She got beads of perspiration as she tries to keep her cool. She says that mess, it don't get no better. There's gonna come a day, someone's gonna get killed out there. And I turn to her and say, Texas. She says, what? I said, Texas. She says, what? They got big long roads out there.
get out of here. We gotta get out of here. Well, I got a little brother, several meters high. Yeah, he's built just like a quarterback, and he swears he'll testify. He says he's been to Texas, and that's the only place to be. Big stakes because no trouble here, that's the place for me. I'm going to Texas. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm going to Texas. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to Texas. Watch me walking. Watch me walking. Watch me walking.
Chick, 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 and we're back. Nice view today. I'm here in Bluffers Park. I just stole the mayorship for that. I'm facing the yacht club. There's a little inlet for all the beautiful yachts that are in front of me. And behind it, of course, are the bluffs themselves. This huge cliff with this straight down sandy drop. It's an amazing sight, and you can see how the ground is just falling away. There are houses right at the edge, and you could easily see, wow, them just going over. It erodes a bit every year, and people panic and worry about their property values. Anyway, it's a glorious Friday. I'm feeling a little guilty that I've got work to do today. I've got some emails I should be sending with regards to my summer study tour. May is the time to really get going. And during the week, I say, well, okay, I got till Friday. Friday comes along, and I'm thinking, oh, yeah, somebody else is using my office right now. We're renting it out to a counselor. And so maybe I can do it Saturday, you know, and but that's okay. None of us are perfect. I'm just, I don't know. I'm not bursting at the seams to tell you stuff. I'm just winding down this episode 399. Every day I'm going back and forth about, is it going to end at 400 or not? Today's latest thought was, well, I'll tell you what, maybe I'll just do half-hour shows. That's kind of a compromise. And I know it's ridiculous for me to make such a big deal out of this thing. But it's, I'm conflicted, you know. I like doing this. I don't really need to stop. But at the same time, I've decided this is a time of change in my life. Taking this course, stepping away from the Youth Justice and the Canada-Japan Society, and it just feels right to
you know, open up some time and do some different things. So, you know, there's just one part that says, hey, let it go. Come back with something different. And another voice says, well, you won't know till after episode 400 whether you're going to come back or not, so it doesn't really matter. Why the hell are you forcing your listeners to hear you go on and on about this? And again, I guess it's because I'm just trying to peel back the layers and reveal my inner soul and what's going on. Speaking of inner soul, we did a segment, our third class this week in the counseling course I'm taking, was on grief and how to deal with grief and the stages of grief, which probably most of you are familiar with. You know, the bargaining, the acceptance, the... We talked about where does guilt fit in, and denial, and all of that stuff. And I realized something. I guess I'm a little uncomfortable about sharing it with you, but maybe I will because I've said all along that this podcast is supposed to be authentic and real, and the fact that I do have still some faithful listeners can only be... not because of my wit and humor, but because every once in a while I'll bare my soul. I'm sure that's the reason. And I don't hear that on too many other podcasts. So, as we discuss grief, you're supposed to be doing some self-examination. One of the theories is if you're going to be a good counselor, you've got to know what your limits are. You've got to know who you are, what your hot buttons are, what your issues are, because you're going to get drawn into somebody else's pain and sorrow and troubles and depression and anxiety and everything else, and you're going to have to be able to deal with your own. And if you can't, you might find you're getting, you know, you're ending up in a ball of tears, just like the person you're trying to help. So when it came to the topic of grief, my first thought was, well, I don't really have any, you know. I've dealt with my parents' death. I haven't lost my wife, my sons. You know, I'm not... The grief was related to people who have to give up alcohol or drugs. I thought it was a wonderful idea that most institutions where they're training counselors have the clients... write a goodbye letter to whatever drug they were taking. And maybe if it's several drugs, a different goodbye letter to each drug that they're giving up, and then ceremoniously burn them. I thought that was just a wonderful, wonderful idea. But as we went on in the discussion, you share and you break into groups and you listen to each other's stories, and the room is full of people with real life issues. And that's what makes the course quite special. I'm not dealing with a bunch of just young college students at all. And that's what I was afraid it would be. It's the real thing. Anyway, I started thinking about, you know how often on this podcast I talk about every time I look at childhood pictures of my kids, I feel this sadness. And I've always attributed it to, well, that's just because... childhood dies and they're not coming back, and you can't have that again, and they're never going to sit on your lap again, and it's just over, and your sadness is a form of grief, and the grief is for the loss of your children. They're not children when they're in their 20s. And then there was this revelation I had that, no, really, that was only part of it. That's true, but what I was really grieving and feeling so sad, and that the pictures were triggering, was those years of my marriage when it was really not very good. When my wife and I weren't talking, weren't communicating, when there was a coldness in the house, certainly an absence of love. And it was more painful probably than I've owned up to. It's not something I'm even comfortable talking about now, but I'm assuming anybody listening to this has already bought into the program, and I can trust you and let this go, put it out there. I know it would just cause horrors for my wife, but Since she doesn't listen, and since I'm trying to be honest, and since she's said that I probably would be a good counselor, I'm sharing it. There was a long period of a very rough time, and of course it coincided with the kids, maybe when they're in their early teens. And it's a time when there should have been love and laughter and joy in the house and a togetherness and a sense of family that was missing. And I know that that's what really bothers me. And the grief that I've been hiding up to now, or disguising, I should say, is for my children. And it is for me, and it is for my wife, and the pain she was going through, too. It's for all of us. And that's just the kind of thing that you want to get out of a course like this. You don't want to feel bad, but you want to be honest. You want to open up. You want to... It's the real thing. If you're going to be a counselor, it's not just, no, tell me your story and I'll tell you what to do. It's you're entering into this world, this special relationship with somebody else who's in trouble and isn't able to, on their own, find a solution or an answer or a way of coping. And you try and help them by helping them to share their story and their pain and their problems and concerns and helping them find a path that will work for them. And I really do want to get into this. I really think this is. And this is another reason why I keep getting back to this episode 400. Okay, stop. We're changing. There's a new person. I'm redefining myself as a counselor. Not yet, of course. It'll be another year before I get all my credits and can actually even call myself that, and then I'm going to have to join an association and take further training and see where I go from there. And who knows, by then I may have changed my mind entirely. Many of you have heard all this before when I said I was opening up my mediation company and did a wonderful job of designing the Meishi, the business cards, and came up with a name and a program, and I just had all the paperwork done, and, you know, even registered the company. And never had a single client, never went any further, just stopped there. I did volunteer work. I didn't actively pursue it. I did place an ad once. But now, with the mediation behind me, and as a skill that I've learned, of course, through mediation, you learn to listen. And to be a counselor, the key is active listening, authentic listening. I think I can combine those two, and I think the skills and the training and the experience I've got through mediation will prove to be very useful in counseling. And I'd really like to. I can't think of a nobler goal at this point than to maybe help another person or two. So that's where I'm going to leave it for now. Oh, thanks as always. This is the winding down of Dixon James Podcast number 399. Stay tuned for number 400, and then who knows what. It doesn't really matter. What will be, will be. We shall see. And those of you out there, again, those of you faithful listeners who are occasionally just pop in a reminder to let me know you're still out there, thank you very, very much. It means a lot to me. I know, just last thought on that, this whole process of putting out 400 hours of this kind of thing, as silly as much of it is, it has been a very helpful process. This has been part of my growth. And I actually think it's helped me. And I always did from the beginning claim it was a form of therapy, so let it be that. Take care, and probably talk to you next week. Bye for now.